listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and flying solo today. Every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, we will bring you guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Answers for the Family will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. As I'm sure many of you expected to hear Marvin's voice with me this morning, but once again, he is making a positive difference in the lives of many children today. Now, our topic today is adoption. And a Southerner through and through, our guest today, Christy Woodson, attended college at the University of North Carolina and still resides in the Tar Heel State. Now, in addition to blogging at Design Chick about how creating a beautiful home can be a catalyst for creating a beautiful life, Christy has put out her first novel, Dear Carolina, which brings great insight into the most difficult decisions mothers on both sides of the adoption equation will ever make. So stay with us as Christy describes the weaving together of three lives: Carolina's, her birth mother, and her adoptive one, in a story that proves that life circumstances shape us but don't define us, and that families aren't born, they're made. Christy, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and thank you for that beautiful introduction. That was great.
Well, you're very welcome. This is a subject, and for someone like me who works with a lot of at-risk youth, we have found, and there are various studies that have been put out, that there is an inordinate, good word for me, amount of children that have gone through adoption that we end up dealing with. So what that tells us is that there have been some issues in maybe people not recognizing how important this is. So for that reason, I'm really glad to have you on and be able to address this subject. But one of the things I'm very interested in is tell us about your particular inspirations to decide to write Dear Carolina. Now, obviously, you know, much of it is set in a Southern rural setting, for those that haven't read it. So how did that become a big part of this book?
Well, the setting was, I think, a really important part. You know, I think the South is a very particular region, and, you know, certainly the story could have happened anywhere, but I think the South adds maybe a certain dimension to it that you wouldn't have gotten if it had been set somewhere else. In particularly with Jody, the birth mother, has this very specific North Carolina dialect that she speaks in throughout the book. And, you know, it's set on a farm and sort of a rural area. And there are just a lot of elements to the book that I think sort of lend itself to the South. But it's certainly a story that could have taken place anywhere.
Well, and if, you know, for those listening, obviously that North Carolina dialect comes out loud and clear in you as well.
Yes. Well, ours is a little different than mine, but yes, I definitely have an accent. I cannot hide it. People ask me from Texas a lot. So.
Well, now, I mean, as a mother yourself, you know, how did the topic of adoption become so important to you to write a book about it?
Well, there are a lot of different things that I feel like sort of happened in my life kind of all at the same time. For one thing, when I wrote the book, I had just given birth to my son. And that was sort of an interesting thing because I was not sure I was going to be able to have children. And certainly not in the way, I mean, my husband and I had been married a few years when I got pregnant. And it was just this sort of amazing thing because you know, we weren't sure that that was going to happen. And if it was going to be able to happen, it was probably going to be, you know, sort of a long, difficult road. So adoption was something that we had talked about a lot, even before we got married, and something that we had always sort of factored in as a part of our life, and still might, you know. But I just remember having him and just holding him and thinking, I never would have understood what a tremendous gift another woman had given me, you know, and giving me her child. And just really kind of my heart going out to these birth mothers, you know, who were put in these really difficult situations to make this really selfless and beautiful choice for their child to have, you know, a life that they know that they can't give them for whatever reason. And so that was really the inspiration for the story. But, you know, during that time, I had a couple of friends that were going through the adoption process in all different ways. And it was just a topic that was really on my heart. But it was very interesting to me the way this story idea came to me, because I've, you know, written several books before this one and several books after. This is the first one, you know, that came out. But I had written a couple of practice books, I guess. And then usually, you know, the ideas for the story will come to me little by little, you know, in pieces. And right. This one just came to me all at once. It was just, I say it's almost like when your life flashes before your eyes. It was just kind of this instant where I was holding my son and I was looking at him. And I just knew this whole story and what I wanted it to be about. So it was kind of interesting in that way. It was like I was supposed to write it or something.
Well, first, I think that's such a beautiful way to look at it, because it is a gift. And to be able to look at it and look at it immediately from the other person's perspective of, you know, what a beautiful gift had I adopted, what a beautiful gift they were giving me. You know, I think most people initially would look at it and think, you know, I can't ever give up this child, you know, and you,
right.
most of us look inward, you know, as to how we're feeling about it, but to be able to immediately look at it that way, I just think is such a beautiful way to, you know, to look at the subject of adoption. Now I want to let you know, I try to get ready for these. And so I went through and I read some of the reviews of your book, you know, on the internet and, you know, places like Amazon and things like that. And I just want to share with everybody out there, the reviews were incredible. And what I noticed was it appeared that both mothers and fathers from different demographics seemed to be able to relate to the struggles of readjusting to their lives to being parents. So, you know, tell us about your experience and how your book can actually, you know, be of help to all new parents.
Well, you know, that's been a really interesting thing that has come out of this, because I really, you know, and I don't mean this to sound sort of trite, but I really set out to write a story that would entertain people, that they would enjoy, that, you know, they could lay on the beach and have a good time and, you know, maybe not feel like they had wasted 5 hours of their life, but they, you know, really enjoyed what they read. And I was so shocked at the way that people have really connected with this book, which kind of furthers the thought, you know, that I really feel like I was supposed to write it, you know, in some way. And certainly when you're dealing with a topic like this, you do a lot of research. You talk to a lot of people who have been on all sides of the situation. So I did that, and I really tried to get kind of an insider's perspective of what that might be like, you know, to give up your child or to adopt a child. And I hope that that came through in the pages. But it's been so interesting to me, the people that have, you know, emailed me or come to see me at events and said, you know, adoption was a part of my story. And, you know, my children that I have now that I kept, they never knew that I had a baby that I gave up for adoption. And this kind of made me feel like it was okay and that I could finally tell them. And, I mean, things that just really blew me away. And I have had so many people tell me their stories of open adoption and say, you know, we adopted a child and the birth mother spends every weekend with us, or, you know, we, you know, this is how we keep in touch with the birth parents. Or it's just been really beautiful to kind of get to be a part of people's lives in this way. And just such a special, special thing that I did not expect, but it has been just such a blessing for me in my life.
Well, one of the things that I noticed in one of the reviews was there was another sort of byproduct, because again, when I started reading it, I really felt that everybody was going to comment about, how it related to them going through the adoption process. And so the first thing that I noticed were the parents that were talking about just how it helped them just being a new parent and didn't mention adoption. But the other thing was that there was one of the reviews that mentioned that they felt that it was sort of an insight into a Southern woman. What a Southern woman was like. And so I'm wondering, did you intend that? And what would you most like people from other parts of the country to know about Southern women?
That's really interesting. Yeah, I like that. Well, and actually, I think this story, even more so, I mean, an adoption story is certainly what it is. It's kind of its most basic level. But I think, too, the story is really about these two women, and they're from these totally different walks of life. And, on the surface, they don't really seem to have anything in common, but they completely change each other's lives throughout the course of this book. And maybe even more so, than the adoption of Carolina. I think these two women and the bond that they come to share is just absolutely amazing. And I do think, there is something special about Southern women. There's kind of a strength there, I think. And I really see that in both of these characters. Jody is really just that woman that has had to pick herself up by her bootstraps and make something of herself, and she does that in a really remarkable way. And so I think, she's a really strong, powerful woman. But then I also think Khaki, sometimes she's a little too strong and she's a little bit of a know-it-all, and she thinks she kind of knows best. And but I think sometimes we're all like that a little bit, that we think that we want to be in control and, we know what's best. And so she certainly has that fast at her character. But I don't think you're supposed to love everything about every character. They're supposed to be a little bit real. But I think to put herself in that position where she really grapples with this, she has a hard time deciding to have, this birth mother in her daughter's life. She really struggles with knowing that, her daughter has another mother and that she should really be open to that, but she knows it's the right thing and she gets through that. And I think that requires an amazing amount of strength. And, I know women who have done this and who have been in this position. And I just think it's, you definitely have to be a very strong person to be able to overcome the fears that you would have, about having this other woman in your child's life and what that might could mean for you. So I love that about Southern women. But, I think, yes, it's certainly about these two Southern women in particular, but I think the book really speaks to issues that women are facing all over the place. I mean, we're trying to balance careers and children and be good wives and good friends and, all people, I guess, really. But for me, I wrote this book when I had a brand new baby. I mean, he was only a few days old when I got the idea for this book. So, I was writing and while I was up at night doing feedings and all these sorts of things. And so, the insights that you get into motherhood and, I say, when you're reading about someone being up all night with a baby or being exhausted or whatever they're going through, like, I was living that. It is very real.
Well, but and I think it shows. I mean, I think it comes out in the writing because it seems to touch on not just the strengths of both women, but the insecurities as well.
Yeah.
And the sometimes self-doubt. It's interesting. I've never really thought of, when somebody writes, what is it that they're going through right at that particular moment? Is it 2 o'clock in the morning and you're feeding? I don't really think of those things, but now, in reading this and listening to you talk about it, I think it opens up another avenue of what we think about while we're, while we're going through a book and we're reading things that we may be able to relate to. So it certainly comes out.
Thank you. Well, it is sort of interesting because sometimes I have another book coming out in April, and sometimes people say, "When do you write?" Because I'm technically a full-time mom, and I especially look back on Dear Carolina, and I think, when did I write that? It's all such a blur of just new motherhood and writing, and emotions kind of in those pages. So it was sort of unique, and I think I'll probably look back on it, you know, 20 years down the line and kind of have a chuckle about it and think, gosh, that is sort of what I was going through too, and I was feeling those things. So I think it'll be sort of neat in that way to be able to look back on it.
Well, now.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm hearing a couple of breaks, but I'm not sure if it's just me or if it's everybody. Hello?
I'm here.
I think. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I heard a click. So as you were talking about that, and I'm in thinking about the fact that you're going through all of these things. You know, at the heart of it, you know, while you're writing this, how did it help you? In other words, you know, there's sort of a reciprocal situation here to where you're writing this, but you're also becoming, a mother for the first time. How did this help you find yourself? How did it help you in finding, the love, for your child, for your family? And, what did this mean to your family? How do you think that this helped the growth of your family by writing this book at this time?
Well, I mean, I think certainly, after you give birth, you sort of have all these emotions kind of come to the surface, and you're so madly in love with this little person, and it does change you. But for me, and this might surprise you reading the book, but I am not a terribly emotional person. Like, I'm not, I'm not like that girl that cries a lot, or like I'm not very emotional. And so I feel like once I had Will, and really through writing this book, it kind of brought something out in me that was maybe a little bit untapped, which of course is wonderful for your life, but also in a sort of practical way, it was also really good for my writing. So I think it, maybe took me to a deeper level of people's emotions, not even just about having children, but just kind of really sort of tapping into that more emotional side and like relating to what people are going through and that type of thing. So that was really interesting. But family has always been really important to me. And I'm an only child, but I have kind of a big extended family, and we've always spent a lot of time together, and we're all very close, and they've been such a big part of my life. And even though the story is not really about, them, I think it is really about the ways in which we create our families, or I hope it is. I hope that comes through to the reader that, family doesn't have to look a certain way. It doesn't have to be a certain way. It doesn't have to be the husband and the wife and the 2.5 kids and the dog anymore. I mean, families are looking different, and I think that is just such a really beautiful thing. And so I tried, through the pages of this book just to show a couple of, this different ways that people are creating their families. And I think we're living in a really unique time right now where, different things are happening, and the people that we love are our family, and it doesn't necessarily have so much to do with blood as it does with who we choose to have in our lives.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think that was a common theme throughout the book, which was family was love, and love was family, and I think that was a great feeling, that I got from the book. Now, I had mentioned in the introduction that you were also a blogger, so did your experience as a design blogger, did that influence your writing as far as with this particular story?
Well, it really did, and primarily because Khaki in the book is an interior design. An interior designer, and she travels, in between North Carolina and New York, kind of trying to have her roots and this career that she loves that she has built in this other place. So, I feel like I've gained a lot of knowledge about interior design over, the past 6 years that we've had the blog, and not only that, but I've talked to so many interior designers and gotten to interview them, different stages in their careers and their lives. And I really think that insight helped me to be able to create this character. And, our work is a really important part of what we do, too. And I think it really helps shape us. And, in the book, all of Khaki's chapters start with a little anecdote about interior design that somehow metaphorically relates to what she's going through in that chapter. And then, on the flip side, Jody, who is the biological mother, she's sort of on the cusp of starting this new career in food and canning and cooking, and she's writing this cookbook and doing all these cool things. And her pages really relate to what she's doing too. So, you know, I think work is, it's a lot of what we do in our lives, and I think it's really cool if you get to do something that you love every day. And these two characters certainly do. And that was actually something that I added in later.
Once
I sort of realized how important the characters' jobs were, I went back and kind of made them, you know, relate to their lives in those ways. So.
Now, did you relate to or identify with one character more than the other?
Well, it's really funny because, you know, people who read this book are always like, oh my gosh, like, you know, you think you're like tacky or whatever. But I honestly feel like I related to these characters equally. Jody has a lot of, I'm very interested in, you know, gardening and farming and farm to table and, you know, all those sorts of values that Jody's really interested in and are such a huge part of her life. Jody relates to the land, I think, in a way that maybe most people don't. I mean, I think she has kind of a deeper understanding of that, and not that I do, but I think that I'm very fascinated by that and the people who do that. And living, you know, in this community that we live in, there's a lot of farming and, you know, a lot of those farm-to-table values. And, I mean, I really do, like, my son and I will get in the car and we will drive from farm to farm and buy our meat and buy our dairy products and buy our vegetables and, you know, go to all these different places. And so I think that's really a cool thing. And that was something that I sort of wanted to explore, that I really got to explore through the character of Jody. And then, you know, tacky with the interior design. And actually growing up, my parents lived in North Carolina and New York, like Tacky does and her family. And they quit doing that when I was pretty small, but I remember it. And I always thought that was like the most glamorous life. And it's funny because writing this book now, you know, having a child of my own, I look back and I think, what a nightmare that must have been. Something that I once thought was so glamorous. And now I sort of think, gosh, packing up your children every 2 weeks and, you know, going to a different place. And that must have been really exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
But I really identify with both of these characters in so many ways. And, you know, and I think we all have struggles and I think we all have strengths. And, you know, both of these characters really exemplify that. And I just found it easy to connect with both of them, you know, sort of with different parts of myself.
All right. Well, the book that these characters are in is called Dear Carolina. We're going to take a break. If you want to follow along with us, you can go to Christy's website. It is www.christywoodsonharvey.com. You can open up another window. You can follow along with us. Obviously, if you're driving, don't try this. But we're going to take a break right now. We will be back in about 60 seconds.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back. We are talking with Christy Woodson Harvey. The book is called Dear Carolina, and the subject is adoption. Now, Christy, we have received a couple of emails that have come in, and again, I thank everybody that takes the time to do that, to either instant message or send us an email. and some of you I know send them the night before, which is great. We know that we're on in the middle of the day, so you may not be able to listen. So what some do is they send us an email ahead of time. We ask the question, and then they go on and listen either by going to the website and listening, or they subscribe through iTunes so that they can listen and hear the answer at a later time. And again, we appreciate it very much. Now, this particular comment says, my daughter was 15 when she became pregnant. The father was turning 18 and heading off to start his studies at a major art institute in New York. He was very distraught, as was my daughter. I personally was in the middle of a divorce, so we were all recommended to an open adoption agency. A wonderful family emerged, and for the last 17 years, my granddaughter has had two families who love her. My daughter is like an older sister, never interfering in Julie's upbringing by her adoptive parents. Julie says she is one of the lucky ones to have two families that love her, and she will be going off to college in the same town where my daughter lives, and she leaves next year. So happy endings do happen in adoptions when a child comes to understand she is loved and not abandoned. Thank you for writing your book.
Oh my goodness, that is amazing. And those are, you know, that's the kind of thing that just has absolutely blown me away. And I don't think people can even understand how much it means to me to have them share their stories with me. I mean, I just think that is the most inspirational thing in the world. And, you know, just a true testament that dreams come true and happy endings happen. And that is a beautiful story. Wow.
Yes. Yeah, and again, thank you for that, and I thank everybody that takes the time to either call us or to email or instant message their comments in, and I especially love the success stories like this. It really touches my heart. Obviously, it's touching our guest's heart, and I believe it is also touching the heart of many of our listeners. So, thank you for that. So, Christy, what has been the best thing about becoming an author?
Oh, my goodness. Well, this has just been such a dream come true for me that I cannot even believe it's happening. I have these moments sometimes and I'm like, wait, this happens. Like, I'm doing this. I'm on book tour, you know. It really has been a dream come true. But I went to journalism school and I always knew I wanted to be a writer, but I really thought I would more doing, you know, journalistic types of things. And when my husband and I got married, we decided we wanted to make our life in this small eastern North Carolina town where he's from. And I loved it and, you know, love everything about it. But I was doing a lot of freelance work and just finding that maybe I wanted to be able to do a little bit more steady writing. And so that was when we started the blog, first of all. And then it was almost just kind of a random idea. I was like, you know, I think I'm going to write a book. And it was sort of a surprising choice because I had taken a lot of creative writing classes in college. And it just wasn't my thing. I mean, it was fine, but I didn't love it like I loved journalism. You know, I really loved going out and meeting people and hearing their stories and getting to hear where they came from and what was special about them. And that was just the best thing in the world to me. So I don't even really know where the idea came from, but I just thought, I'm going to try it and see how it goes. And so I read a lot of books about, you know, what you're supposed to do when you're a first-time author and how you should write. And so I wrote two manuscripts that I sort of call my practice manuscripts that I never did anything with. But you know, I think they were worthy efforts. I'm glad that I did them, but I didn't really feel like I had quite found my voice as a writer yet. So I wrote a third manuscript, actually before Dear Carolina, and ended up signing with a literary agent for that one, which was amazing. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I was, like, just blown away that had even happened. And in the meantime, you know, everything in publishing is a bit of a lengthy process. So he had that book out on submission, and I had written Dear Carolina. And it really wasn't even hardly more than a first draft. I mean, maybe a second draft, but it certainly was not ready for publication. And I submitted it to a writing contest, and it won. And the final round judge was an editor at Penguin Random House, and she loved the book and bought it. Of course, it was a much longer story than that, but so this really was a dream come true. And it was something that, you know, I really worked on kind of honing this craft for a couple of years before I really even put anything out into the world. So, you know, the fact that it's happening just feels like really such a dream come true. And I have loved every part of it. I mean, I got to go on this great book tour, and my mom came with me, and my three-year-old son, and my husband met us on the weekends. And I mean, we were like the Queen of Books. It was hilarious. But we had the best time and just got to meet readers and bookstore owners all over the place, and have just had a ball. I mean, I have loved every moment, from signing books to meeting readers to, you know, writing the next one. So it's all just been wonderful.
Well, is there anything that surprised you that you just went, wait a minute, I didn't expect this?
Well, I'll say, you know, there, the thing that I hadn't really recognized when I set out to do this is, you know, it's one thing to sit in your office upstairs and write a book. It is another thing when you are writing one book and you're publicizing one book and you're editing one book, you know, because once you sort of get into this publishing field, I was out, you know, promoting Dear Carolina. So my next book's coming out in April. So I was working on, you know, the final round edits for that. And then at the same time, trying to finish my third novel. So it gets a little bit different. You're like, oh, this really is a job. I see, you know. So I think just kind of balancing all of that was a little bit of a surprise to me, just because I didn't really know a lot of people who did this, and I hadn't really thought it through that much past just like, oh my goodness, I want this so badly, I can face it. But, you know, even that has just been, it's been really fun, and it's interesting because it all seems to work out in just the right way. It would seem like, you know, I would have a little bit of a lull and, you know, tour schedule, and then that's when they would need some edits on the book, and, you know, then I'd sort of sneak in some time to work on the next one. So it's really worked out really well. But I was a little bit surprised by that, I think.
Well, can you give us a sneak peek on the next one that's coming out?
Sure. Well, so the next one is, it's all about family secrets and the things that we do to protect people that we love. There's some similar themes to Dear Carolina. It's a lot about family. And there's a big family in this book, which I really enjoyed getting to write all of these characters. I had a blast with that. And in like Dear Carolina, it's written from the perspective of two women, but this one's a little bit different because it's written from a grandmother and a granddaughter. So that was really fun for me to kind of try to get into the heads of these two characters that were really different and living in these very different times. And they have a bit of a similar story, but I think that the book is a little bit of a comment on the differences between, you know, marriage and family life today and marriage and family life, you know, in the 50s and 60s and that kind of era, and, you know, our values and those types of things. But I'm very excited for it to come out. I can't wait. It's called Lies and Other Acts of Love. And, but again, you know, it really is all about family, just sort of like Dear Carolina.
Okay. I'm making a note of that. No, I'm sure I'm making a note of it so that I can let our producer Jan know that it maybe in April we'll see if we can book you and you can tell us a little bit more about that one when the time comes.
Well, that would be wonderful. Thank you. I appreciate that.
When that one's ready to go. You know, we have another comment that has come in, and this one reads, I was so moved by the book's description that I ordered it on Amazon, and I read it over the weekend. It was magnificent. I counsel parents of at-risk teens, and on several occasions, this particular situation has arisen, and it wasn't always the teen who was pregnant. It was sometimes a single mother with multiple older children who was financially unable to care for a new baby. The book is now going to those individuals and will be on my shelf for the next time this discussion comes up again. Thank you for writing a book that so touches my heart.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Oh my goodness, that is amazing. Wow.
Yeah. You know,
I really appreciate that.
And we have quite a few listeners who are psychiatrists, psychologists, therapists, and such that work with families. And so I always love to get their feedback, because they are the ones that are working on a day-to-day basis with families. And when they see something that they like, I love the fact that they share it with everybody. So
That is absolutely wonderful. And you know, that is a bit of a hesitation and a fear when you're writing fiction. I mean, of course, you know, I am 100% certain that things in the book probably tie up a little bit more nicely than they do a lot of times in life. You know, life ebbs and flows, and I'm sure this story will continue to do so as well. But it is sort of nerve-wracking when you set out to write a story that you think is very worthy and a story that needs to be told, but then maybe isn't your story. You know, how that will be received is, you know, it did make me a little bit nervous. So I've just been, it really means a lot to hear from people that, you know, it touched them in that way. And I really appreciate that.
Well, for those of us that are out there that have always felt like they have a book or two in them, share with them some of the things, the process that you went through, because obviously, you know, this is a huge step. So, you know, everything from maybe what your process was to how you scheduled your time, because I think in this day and age, everybody has so many things to do. How do you decide that you're going to be able to set aside X amount of time and focus on that, especially with a 3-year-old?
Well, and, you know, I think this all comes back to, you know, prioritizing and what you really want to do with your life. And I have met so many people through this process who are writers. And let me tell you what, I mean, these people are busy. I will say there are probably only a handful of writers who I know who really, you know, can set aside 8 hours a day to write. There are very few and far between. And so many of them I know, you know, so many of them have full-time jobs. A lot of them have part-time jobs. I mean, all of them have children, you know, that they're responsible for. So it's definitely interesting to see how people really make time for this dream. And I think sometimes that's how you know that you're really passionate about something, when you're willing to kind of sacrifice your time from somewhere else to do it. But, you know, for me, I think it has been different now, you know, as my son has gotten older and he's not napping and things like that. I do a lot of my writing on the weekends. I'm very fortunate that my husband doesn't work on Fridays, so he's able to sort of, they get to have their special bonding days and I get to get in a lot of writing. Ideally, I would love it if I could write 2,000 words a day. That's what I used to do. And that was great, but that doesn't happen so much anymore. So for me, it really is just kind of trying to schedule in, you know, little bits and pieces here and there. And one thing that I do that, you know, I've sort of trained myself to do that I think is extremely helpful is if I do find myself with, you know, 30 or 45 minutes to write, wherever I've left off from the day before, I make notes to myself of whatever is coming next, so that I can make sure just to jump right into it. I don't have to go back and read and figure out where I was and what I was doing. So, I carry my laptop with me everywhere. So when my son falls asleep for 5 minutes in the car, I'm like, you know, typing away real quick. My process, though, I think I've met writers that have the same sort of process that I do, but I think it's maybe a little bit strange. But I tend to just get sort of an idea of a scene that really grabs hold of me. And it might be a character, it might be two characters who are talking, but it's something that, you know, now that I've maybe had the experience to look back and see what it is, it usually ends up kind of being the emotional core of the book. Like the first scene of Dear Carolina that I wrote is the one where Jody is sitting on the beach and she's trying to decide whether to give up Carolina, and, you know, she says love is the hardest equation, or, you know, whatever she says. And that was the very first scene of this book that I wrote, and it was like dead in the middle of the book, which can be a bit of a problem when you come back around and you're trying to make sure that the timeline works out. But I really do just start with those scenes that feel really important to me, and then I kind of write around them and fill in the gaps. And that works really well for me, because I think you're kind of knowing what the emotional core of your story is very, very important to me as a writer. And I think that helps me to not lose sight of that, and helps me to remember that, you know, that really is the important thing. Like, what is the message here, and that kind of thing. But it's definitely difficult. And I've met so many writers, you know, at signings that say, I have my children, and, you know, I'm trying to sneak in time where I can, but it's definitely something that can be difficult. And I think the other thing too is you just have to be kind of easy on yourself, because you know, if you're not writing 8 hours a day, you're probably not going to be able to sit down at your desk every morning and type out your perfect however many thousand words. You know, that would be wonderful, but that just is not a reality for most of us. So, you know, I think, you know, making it a priority where you can is, but then I think, you know, if it takes you 3 years to write it, you still got it done. And I think that's kind of something that I've had to, you know, be a little bit easier with myself on is, you know, yes, I would love to have gotten it done earlier or that kind of thing. But, you know, if it takes me a couple of months longer than I thought it was going to write, then that's fine. You know, my priority right now is my family, and this is absolutely a priority too. But I think the reality is we just have to fit it in where we can.
And I think you bring up a great point, because I think a lot of people think of writing as being very linear, to where you have to pick up where you just left off. And I think that you just provided a very nice gift in the sense of saying you don't have to necessarily write that. You can write whatever scene comes to your mind at that time. Like you said, if you have 30 minutes or so that's available to you to go ahead and write that particular scene and then weave it together afterwards, but it still allows you to get that, in this case, 2,000 words, because I think that a lot of us will get, you know, the old term writer's block, but then that's, I think, because we're trying to write in a linear fashion and we just haven't made that connection yet. But if we just jump forward to a scene that we know emotionally grabs us, we'll figure out how to tie it together later.
No, and that's absolutely true. And, you know, especially it's summer now, so it's a little different. But when my son's in preschool, you know, that is the first thing that I make sure I start my day. And even if I only have 30 minutes, you know, when I drop him off to preschool, you know, that is the first thing that I do is get some words down on paper. And I think, and I've talked to other, you know, mothers about this, and I think that, you know, when you're in that situation and you have limited time, writer's block is not something that you can afford. You know, we laugh, like if we waited to be inspired, it would take us 10 years to write a book, because, you know, how often do you really have these glorious moments of inspiration? I mean, they happen, but certainly not often enough that you're going to get a whole book full of glorious inspiration day after day after day. And, you know, we laugh because, you know, these first drafts, you know, you go back through and you'll read it and you'll think, oh, that is awful. But, you know, the first draft is the first draft for a reason. And I think sometimes you just have to get it down on paper and you just have to get it done. And then you can go back and you can, you know, weave it together in a different way, or, you know, you always change it. And I think sometimes there's that fear of, I'm putting this down on paper and here it is. But, you know, whatever you're putting down on paper, it's not permanent. And, you know, this has been a long process for me of kind of learning these things. When I first set out to write a book, you know, I thought it had to be in third person because I wasn't experienced. So I thought it had to be written linearly because I wasn't experienced. You know, all these certain things that I thought I had to do. And I think when you kind of let go of those rules and you figure out what works for you, that's when the really good things kind of start to come out of you.
Well, and I know in this case something really great did come out, and obviously it has touched a lot of people. Now, you mentioned that you now are in this position. You've completed one book, so there's the tour for that one. You are, I guess, in the editing process of another one. Now, you're also writing a third book at the same time. Is that correct?
I am, and I actually finished the first draft of my third one a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, I think that's important, too. You sort of have to give yourself a deadline, and that's what I do with myself, because, you know, this next book, I had a certain time that I really wanted it to be in, and it is not, you know, I don't know, it has not been purchased yet. I have not turned it in or anything like that, but I have to give myself kind of certain deadlines, because it's easy to get caught up in, well, I really could do one more tweet right now, or, oh my gosh, I need to respond to this person's Facebook message right away. And I think that's kind of something that I've struggled with a little bit too, is that you're so grateful. I mean, you are so grateful that anyone that took the time to read your book, and then that they would take the time to say these nice things and spread the word about it. And you're so grateful that you want to be able to respond to everyone right that minute. And, you know, for a few weeks, I think that's reasonable and I think that's possible. But there does kind of get to a point where you're like, okay, all right, I'm going to get back to this, or I'm never going to write another one. You know, so I do try to give myself deadlines and make sure that I'm sticking to them. But, you know, like I said, it's a first draft, and what that first draft looks like today will be completely different than what it looks like in a few weeks. And I did actually get one of those great moments of inspiration the other night, and I went in and wrote a new beginning and a new end to that book. It was just like I had this flash where I thought, oh my gosh, this is what this book means. And so I do definitely think that happens. But you know, sometimes I really think you just have to get it down on paper and then go from there and work with what you've got. And that was something that I really struggled with and that I really had to learn how to make myself do.
Mm-hmm. Now with this third one, is it another freestanding, or is there any connection to either of the prior two?
That is another freestanding, although I will tell you, I have gotten a lot of emails asking me for a sequel to Dear Carolina. And I kept saying, oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. But I still sort of finished with this story. And I was just driving down the road one day, and I had a couple hours in the car by myself, and all of a sudden I was like, oh, I have an idea for a sequel. So you never know. That could happen. I have not written it yet, but that may be a possibility. But that also meant a lot to me, too, that people felt invested enough in these characters that they wanted to read more about them. So that was really nice. But in general, yeah, they've just been freestanding books. And I don't know, I think sometimes, once you've gone through something with these characters, you sort of feel a sense of closure with them. And but who knows, I actually do have a little bit of an idea for maybe more of a series that I'd kind of like to write in the future, so we'll see about that.
Well, it sounds like some of those that are now fans are pushing you in that direction. So I think that sounds great. We are just about out of time. Again, I want to tell everybody, if you want to go to the website, you can learn more. It is ChristyWoodsonHarvey.com. If you're driving, you can't write this down, you can always go to the website answers4thefamily.com. Go to our website. We will have all the information on how you can get a hold of Christy, how you can get more information on not only Dear Carolina, but her other upcoming books. So, Christy, is there anything, and just sort of like a success story, something, somebody who has contacted you and shared with you how Dear Carolina affected them?
Well, I mean, I one that kind of comes to mind to me too is, just someone that had contacted me and said that, that she actually got married because she was pregnant, which is a little bit of a different story than this, but she said she had just felt like it was this shameful secret for so long, and, that she finally told her family because she just sort of realized that, this was their family and it didn't matter how it got that way. And I think she had this fear that, people would look at her marriage differently or, her children differently or her life differently if she kind of shared the secret. And so that meant a lot to me too, because I think any time that we can kind of put our truth out there, like that's opening up something for someone else to, be able to learn from and take away from. And so that was another really cool story that I liked.
Right.
But there's been a lot of good ones.
And I think that's it's one of the greatest gifts that we can have, is to have a positive impression on people's lives, and it certainly looks like you're doing that. So thank you so much for coming on. Again, thank you for sharing about this, and we look forward to having you on again in April.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you having me so much, and I really, really also appreciate your listeners that commented and that read my book, and I think that's amazing and just means the world to me. It made my day. Maybe my whole week.
Well, I'm so glad. Again, have a great rest of the week. Get all the time together you need to continue to write, and we look forward to reading those in the future as well.
Thank you so much. Have a good afternoon.
Thank you. And for everybody out there, please tune in next week when our guest, Kiko Hoshino, joins us to talk about her new book, Miraculous Ways to Conquer Cancer, Fighting Illness with Mental Attitudes. And if you miss a show or you want to share this show with your friends, please visit our archives at answers4thefamily.com. And the next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page and like us. Have a wonderful week and be good humans. Bye now.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith right here on LA Talk Radio.